Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. When it comes to state government and politics, it doesn't get any busier than the time between the unveiling of the governor's proposed operating budget every other year in February and July 1st, the beginning of the next fiscal year. This year is no exception. The governor's two-year budget includes $63 billion in spending and calls for a major and controversial shift in how the state would tax for that spending. His school funding plan has reaped plenty of criticism after number crunching showed that several high-wealth districts will get large increases while most poor school districts will get little or no additional basic operating money. And Governor Kasich has elected to expand Medicaid to take advantage of an option offered by the Affordable Care Act, putting himself at odds with the conservative stripe in his party and with fellow Republican statewide office holder Treasurer Josh Mandel. Joining us now to talk about all of that and more is Bill Cohen of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Glad to be here.
And Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News Statehouse Bureau. Laura, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
And Julie Smythe, Statehouse correspondent for the Associated Press. Julie, welcome.
Thanks.
If anybody out there wants to give us a talk about this, 614-292-8513 is the number to call. So it's dog bites man when the Democrats complain about a governor's budget. It's man bites dog when his fellow Republicans, especially another statewide office holder, protest the plan, as did Josh Mandel regarding the expansion of Medicaid benefits in Ohio. He sent a letter to some leadership, well, to the Senate leadership and the House leadership, right, Julie?
Yes. He wrote a letter this week to the Speaker, Bill Batchelder, and new Senate President Keith Faber, and said, please consider rejecting, or I urge you to reject, Governor Kasich's proposal to expand Medicaid. And he made the statement that this was bad for the bottom line, sort of, you know, capitalizing on the fact that he's the state treasurer. Kasich was quick to say, you know, this was a complex decision. We analyzed it, and it is better for the state's bottom line that we do this because we're recapturing this money from the federal government that Ohio taxpayers sent there. But it's a fascinating turn of events, as you say, because Mandel, who lost a bid for Senate last year, was sort of appearing publicly to be fading. And you can see that he has decided he doesn't want to fade and he's going to stir things up a little bit.
Risky, Laura?
I think it is. I think that he's trying to position himself as a true conservative. I think the letter sort of mirrors what a lot of the lawmakers in the House are saying in Finance Committee testimony. There's been a lot of questions.
Which is where the budget starts,
yeah,
in the House.
It started in the House, and it's in the Finance Committee hearing. And for those of you who really have nothing to do, you can now watch those Finance Committee hearings online and get all the testimony. It's very exciting. But anyway, I think that that what Josh Mandel is saying sort of mirrors what we're hearing from some of the conservatives within the Finance Committee. There's a lot of concern about, should we even expand Medicaid? Aren't we going to be then piling onto the national debt? Are we going to be hooking people onto a government program that someday may fade away or have to be cut back because the federal government will come to terms with the fact that they're spending too much money? So I think there's a real big debate, and I think that Josh Mandel's letter kind of put it out there, but I think there's going to be a big, huge debate within the GOP.
But, you know, if you look at who's endorsed the idea, though, it's a pretty broad range of folks. Of course, everybody on the political left, labor unions and people who support government welfare programs, social welfare programs, of course, they've said, yes, of course we should expand Medicaid. But then you even have some pretty moderate to conservative groups also endorsing it. The Hospital Association, the Medical Association, and the Ohio Chamber of Commerce. Now, when you get all those groups together, that's a pretty big part of the political spectrum. Yes, you can still oppose the idea from the right, but you're getting, a fairly small chunk of all the groups that are out there. And I think that's one reason Kasich looked at it and said, geez, except for people on my right flank, there's not that many folks opposing this, you know, opposing.
And he is making the distinction, the governor is, that I also opposed what they call Obamacare. I oppose the health mandate. I'm with all those in my party who were out stumping last year saying that this is a bad idea. Of course, Ohio voters rejected the idea of a vote, of a health mandate year before last. However, this is a particular thing that has convinced the administration that it is a monetary sort of win-win for us.
Let's break it down, Laura. It's 100% Medicaid reimbursement. Can you, for 3 years, is it 6 years, and then after that, 90%?
It starts out for the first 3 years, okay. I believe, at 100% of a federal match. The typical match is about 65% federal, 35% state. So this is a really good deal. I mean, the feds are going to pick up the whole tab for the first 3 years. And then in the outlying years, it kind of dials it back to eventually to 90%. Again, a much higher match than what the state is used to. It's a twofold thing because the Obamacare is going to have this individual insurance mandate. Ohio Medicaid is expecting that about 231,000 people who are already eligible for Medicaid will kind of come out of the woodwork or, you know, come to the welcome mat and go ahead and sign up for Medicaid because they're going to have to have insurance or face a fine. And that we will not get the enhanced match for. And so that's going to be very costly for the state of Ohio. But then the second half of it is this expansion of up to 138% of poverty, which I think is like $16,000 for an individual.
The category of who qualifies.
Right, more people would be qualified. And I think there's about maybe 265,000 people in that category, and they're the ones that we'll get the enhanced match for.
Right. So all that being said, though, what Mandel's point is, and those who agree with him, is that it sounds really attractive when you're a state, but we as a nation are paying for this expansion at the federal level, and that could come back to haunt us, which is sort of the debate that's going on now. And one thing that should be pointed out is Kasich has said the same thing. You know, my big worry is that the federal government will not hold its promise and then we'll be stuck. And so he has put into this, his proposal, sort of an opt-out option so that if the federal government bails on its commitment, we won't be on the hook.
The state can bail on its commitment.
Right. The state will just pull the plug on it. And it's interesting because this is a debate that's going on in states all across the country. There was a story from McClatchy newspapers today that 21 states and the District of Columbia and four other states are either locked into expanding or leaning toward it. But there are 12 states that said they're not going to do it. And another, I think, five or six that are saying, we're probably not. And then I think eight are on the fence.
He's not the only Republican governor, though. That's another problem for Republicans.
Yeah. Well, he's one of, I think, six or seven Republican governors mm-hmm. who are going ahead with the expansion.
614-292-8513 is the number to call if you want to join the conversation with Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News and Julie Carr Smythe of the Associated Press and Bill Cohen of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. So what does this represent? Is this when you have someone like one statewide public office holder coming out criticizing another who happens to be the governor and I guess the, you know, at least the, you know, the head of the Republican Party in the state of Ohio, are we looking at a big splinter in the party?
Well, what's interesting to me, and you know, I haven't explored this, so this is just me sort of surmising, but you have to look at last year. I mean, Josh Mandel ran for Senate in the most expensive race in the country. I mean, he is connected with the national groups.
Someone likes him with money.
Yeah, someone likes him with money within the party. I think that maybe they're floating this out there because you have to folks have to realize he put the letter out and then he wouldn't even come out and have a statement on it or come to the phone or have a news conference. I think he behind the scenes put this out, you know, to float it as an idea. And maybe they're just watching to see what happens in Ohio. We're always a sort of a test market for, you know, the divisive issues. And so maybe they're using him as a way to sort of float that out there.
Is it a sign of disrespect to the governor that he didn't at least copy him on it? The governor's saying he hasn't seen the letter, whatever. But
it could be disrespect or it could just be an oversight.
Oversight.
Okay. Or it could be intentional. I mean, because Josh is a former lawmaker, so maybe he feels he has some pull there. Maybe he wants to run against the governor. Maybe he wants to, you know, feels like he has an independent office, which he actually does. Mm-hmm. And there are very few people in the state who can really speak against Kasich right now.
Alicia in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Alicia.
Hi, how are you? I was wondering, I hear a lot about doctors not taking Medicaid, dentists not taking Medicaid. I'm curious, is all these people that are going to be qualifying, is there going to be some reform in, you know, how much Medicaid is paying out to doctors? You know, are people going to be able to find doctors to go to?
It's an interesting question. Thanks, Alicia.
No problem.
That's been a big problem in the past. I think I did a story a couple of years ago about dental benefits, and I think only 1 in 3 dentists take Medicaid patients. So it is a big problem, and I think that there's been a push for more family physicians and nurse practitioners.
Yeah, and I think that the field is trying to probably adjust to this and watch and see what where the needs are.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher, and our Reporters Roundtable continues in just a moment. But first, here's WOSU News Director Mike Thompson and reporter Mandy Trimble to tell you more about Match Day on 89.7 NPR News.
Thanks very much, Ann. This is Match Day here on 89.7 NPR News, and we're counting on you to keep NPR News and All Sides with Ann Fisher and all the local news on the radio for all of Central Ohio. If having news and information available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, is important to you, today is the perfect day to support 89.7 NPR News. It's perfect because today is Match Day. That means your dollars will be matched by generous donors who have put their money on the table to start the day and then asked our listeners, the rest of our supporters, to match their dollars. So call 1-866-897-9678. If you give today, your dollars go farther. 1-866-897-9678, or you can visit our website, WOSU.org.
You know, in the newsroom, we often use ideas as our map. Each day, news and All Sides staff discuss and distill events, issues, and water cooler zingers into a guide for news coverage of Central Ohio without putting too fine a point on it. The end result of our daily editorial meeting is a match between a reporter and a story. Today, we're asking you to make a slightly different kind of match, a tangible financial match with 89.7 NPR News. And your donation today and today only will be matched by a group of generous donors. This hour, it's Linda Goldberg, who put up $5,000 for Match Day. So call 1-866-897-9678 or go to our secure server, WOSU.org, to make your pledge.
1-866-897-9678. It's really a unique one-day fundraising event where you can match your dollars with the dollars of Linda Goldberg and other generous supporters who have launched this Match Day. Your dollars will be matched by Linda and other generous donors if you call now, 1-866-897-9678, or you can go online at WOSU.org. I have to thank Mozart's Bakery and Piano Cafe in Clintonville. They provided us breakfast for us and for our phone volunteers, especially our phone volunteers this morning. You know, if you work or own a restaurant and would like to donate food for our next pledge drive, we want the food. We like it. Give us a call here at WOSU. And again, thank you, Mozart's. I had one of their chocolate pastries this morning, and I may have to venture back to get another one. So thanks to Mozart's. And thank to those of you who have already called here to 89.7 NPR News, Raymond Gerler of Columbus. He pledged during this Match Day. And he says 89.7 is the number one button on his car radio. If 89.7 NPR News is your first choice on your car radio or at your kitchen windowsill when you get up in the morning and you're making that coffee or at your office when you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher, we urge you to call 1-866-897-9678. Make a donation during this match day. We will match your dollars. Your dollars will go farther. 1-866-897-9678 or online at WOSU.org.
Be a part of Match Day on 89.7 NPR News. Like we've been telling you, this is a one-day giving event, one day only. If you tune in tomorrow or on Monday, Match Day will be over. Have your investment in 89.7 NPR News matched by a group of generous WOSU donors. Call 1-866-897-9678. You know, on occasion, reporters like myself, Tom Borgerding, Steve Brown will visit bus stops, job fairs, farm fields, small businesses, or even federal court on occasion to source a story. And it can be very humbling. Individuals tell stories, offer perspective, provide facts, and often within minutes or hours, we get information on 89.7 and WOSU.org. And that's been going on for decades at WOSU, in part because of your generous financial support. So today, you have a chance to leverage your gift as a part of Match Day. Please call 1-866-897-9678, and your donation will be matched by a group of generous supporters.
You know, your gift of a dollar or two a week makes a big difference in our ability to pay for the NPR News and the local news you enjoy every day, to pay for all the effort that goes into All Sides with Ann Fisher. 89.7 NPR News is listener-supported public radio, and today is Match Day. So please call now and have your dollars matched. Thanks for your support, and thanks for joining us on Match Day. Call 1-866-897-9678 or visit WOSU.org.
And we want to thank you for our for supporting WOSU today with our Downton Abbey Season 3 DVD. For just $10 a month as a sustainer, you can receive this gift. It's $120. It has three DVDs that with 2 hours of bonus footage behind the scenes of Downton Abbey, the men of Downton Abbey, and interviews with all the actors. So please give us a call at 1-866-897-9678 and have your dollars matched.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking state government and politics with Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News, Julie Carr Smythe of the Associated Press, and Bill Cohen of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. We're going to turn our sights now to taxing, tax cuts, tax increases, tax expansions. First of all, there, you know, what's coming out of all of this now in the governor's budget proposal is there's an income tax cut, and there's a sales tax cut, and then there's a big sales tax expansion. In other words, the categories that will be taxed. What's the, Bill, what's the upshot for the most people listening out there right now?
Well, the bottom line, now here's the way Kasich likes to say. He says, yes, we'll be collecting a heck of a lot more money in the sales tax, but we're going to cut the income tax 20% for families and individuals, and we're going to cut it 50% for small business. And what he says is the net of the of this whole thing, the bottom line, $1.4 billion in a tax cut net. But depending on who you are, well, you may be saving a lot of money in that tax cut. Other people aren't going to get much of it.
Who earn so little money that it won't affect
them. That's right. There's a lot of people who aren't even paying the income tax, so they don't benefit from that big income tax cut. So there's a liberal think tank, Policy Matters. They did a study, and their conclusion is the top 1% of taxpayers, of income earners, would, under this proposal, save more than $10,000. The next 4%, also upper income people, would save about $1,500 a year. But the bottom 20%, mostly poor people, they would wind up paying more money. They'd pay on average $63 more a year.
Because they're the ones that use the laundromats. They use the bail bonds more likely to use that. What else is there in that?
Well, this list is just huge. I mean, there's like 70 or 80, but just among them, funeral services, cable TV, accounting, pet grooming, haircuts, attorneys, movie tickets, circus tickets, fair tickets, sports events, whether it's pro or college or high school.
We're even talking high school
whole bunch of stuff.
You go to the high school game on Friday night, you're going to pay a sales tax on that ticket.
Bowling alleys, billiards.
Okay, wait a minute.
You know, so
a school district can charge sales tax for a ticket to the basketball game, to a crummy basketball game?
I don't know how that works.
Well, the crummy ones the good ones.
Sorry, crummy.
And the really exciting ones.
I actually like basketball.
Now, they did carve out certain, what they're calling basic needs type services out of this sales tax proposal. So, for example, medical care, child care, rent.
Food will remain exempt.
Right. Food is still exempt. But, you know, so they're trying to take some big ticket items that you're paying on a monthly basis and make sure those are not taxed. Their pitch on this is that this is sort of an elegant reworking of everything to make it more fair, as opposed to just sort of gouging people in an area that happens to be making big money right now. And Kasich's argument is that this is how it's been done in the past, as we take a look at, oh, there's a growing industry, let's say oil and gas, and we tax them a lot. And that we're not doing that in the case of this particular package. It's important to him as a Republican and to their party that this doesn't raise overall taxes, that it's an overall cut. But the Policy Matters study that Bill cites is very interesting because it is an increase for a lot of people.
And it would make sense, whether or not these numbers are exactly correct, it would make sense that there would be this shift. Because we know that the state income tax is very, very graduated. It's the rich are paying the most in. So when you get when you cut the income tax, they're going to save the most. And probably 20% of Ohioans don't pay any income tax at all. So they don't benefit from it at all. Rich people may pay a lot of money for movie tickets and funerals and cable TV. But as a percentage of their income, you know, there's that difference there. So I don't think it's any surprise that you'd say if you make this kind of change, you're going to hit the poor and the middle class more than rich people. And some of the analysis shows kind of middle-income people basically break even under this plan.
Broadening the base of the sales tax will generate how much? Because they want to reduce the overall sales tax by a half a percentage point, I think it is. From five and a half to five. The base sales tax from 5.5 to 5, and then they broaden it to these 82 or odd categories. How much are they going to raise from that? Do we know?
They said $3 billion extra revenue over 3 years, and I think right now it brings in about $8 billion a year, so that's an extra $1 billion a year. It's a pretty big increase in percentage-wise.
Another rub is a limit that it will put on local governments to increase their sales tax. Something that Franklin County is pondering among many other options right now is to increase their sales tax. What are the county's governments saying about this? Anything?
This is a little convoluted, but basically I think that the Kasich administration wants to expand the base, but they don't want to have the local county and the transit taxes then get some giant windfall out of it. And so they're going to say, we'll guarantee that you'll get at least a 10% increase in revenue, but we're going to cap you so that you can't go way, way above that, essentially.
So in other words, if a county is short of money right now and is considering a tax hike, Kasich is basically saying, you don't need to right now. We're expanding the base so much, you are going to get 10% more pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But the counties aren't sure whether over the long haul, or they're wondering, well, maybe if they raise their tax, local tax, they could raise more money than just 10% increase.
Right. I think the challenge with tax policy is when you're trying to make it, when you're trying to spread it out fairly to everybody, you have to watch for things like big spikes like Laura's talking about. So, you know, they're trying to adjust that, but they're also, you know, the party of a local control. And once again, they're sort of taking that away from some of the governments to do what they want to do at the local level.
I think that's a major frustration for the conservatives who advocate for smaller government and lower taxes, is that in Ohio we have this big patchwork of of local taxes. So even if the state reduces the income tax or reduces the sales tax, we have local income taxes, local sales taxes, local transit taxes, and it kind of all piles up. And so when a company wants to move into Ohio, they might look just initially at the state level, and then they get more serious about moving in, and then they find out there's all these other taxes on top of it, and it sort of becomes less attractive. And it's a frustration, I think, at the state level because they really can't control all that.
Let's remember when candidate Kasich announced he was running for governor 3 years ago, he said quite clearly, my real goal is to wipe out the state income tax. Mm-hmm. I believe the state income tax messes up jobs and job expansion, business expansion. I want to basically kill it. Of course, he couldn't kill it with the budget crisis we had, but this is part of his goal, and this is a pretty strong move in that direction. If you looked at the old pie charts of where Ohio got its money, it used to be for many, many years the sales tax, or the income tax, would bring in the most, and then would come the sales tax. But under this new pie chart, he cuts the income tax so much and raises the money coming in from the sales tax that now the sales tax, for the first time in decades, would be the biggest chunk. So this is really huge tax reform.
It's said to benefit a lot of small business owners because of the income tax. A lot of small businesses, that's how they pay their taxes, is through income tax. It'll lower that bill for them. But a lot of small businesses, in fact, the fastest growing number of them are just, you know, one man or mom and pop types of shops that pay their taxes through their income, but don't have to pay sales tax. Shoe shine, laundromat, I mean, it goes on and on and on, hair cutting, that kind of thing, the barber shop and so forth. And that if they have to start collecting sales tax, that's a whole part of the business that they have to create. They have to hire accountants now. They probably have to hire a lawyer. It just creates a whole nother part
of
their business.
And they'll have to pay a tax on those lawyers and accountants.
Exactly, because lawyers and accountants are now taxed, or will be, if this is passed.
Right.
So it is a regulatory burden, I think, on smaller businesses, because the sales tax is like a trust. The people who it's collected at point of sale, and so they have to, you know, set it aside, set it aside, and make sure the right amount gets to government.
And it should be noted, too. I mean, this is, they want to call this the tax cut budget, but we just talked about the Medicaid expansion. This is a hugely, the growth in this budget is huge. I don't have the exact dollar amount in front of me, but it is, exceeding the last budget.
Billions.
Billions. I mean, maybe close to $10 billion mm-hmm. more in spending over the 2 year period. And so it's a growth budget. Some of that is coming from an improved economy. Some of it is attributed to the Medicaid expansion, which is, going to be a bigger program. But still, I mean, he's spending more while cutting taxes, which I'm not sure is what his party wants.
But this is why you've got groups that generally are ideologically opposed to John Kasich, who's generally seen as a conservative. But we've got groups like the food banks and the mental health advocates saying, hey, hurrah for Kasich. Now, maybe if you got him in a room saying, do you really like Kasich's policies? They'd say, no, I voted against him. I'm going to vote against him again. But because he's said, let's expand Medicaid, let's give more money to the food banks, let's in this budget beef up mental health programs, they have put out very glowing statements about him.
Roger Geiger from the National Federation for Independent Businesses loves the idea of cutting the income tax, of course, but they're concerned that it's going to look like, well, big businesses are going to be, big chains that do the haircutting and that sort of thing are going to have to pay the sales tax too. He says, yes, but they have in-house lawyers. They're big corporations. They don't have to pay the extra taxes on lawyers and accountants and so forth. It's going to be interesting to see the discussion and what comes forth in the legislature, whether you watch it online or not. We'll continue the conversation. If anybody wants to join it out there, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking with a panel of State House reporters. More of this conversation in just a moment. But first, Mike Thompson and Mandy Trimble have an update on Match Day on 89.7 NPR News.
Thanks, Ann. This is Match Day, the day where your Donations are matched by our generous donors. We are under a $5,000 match between now and 12 o'clock for the rest of All Sides of the Ann Fisher. Linda Goldberg has put $5,000 into the Match Day Fund for our listeners to match. So if you give money right now, your donation will be matched by Linda Goldberg from now until noon. So thank you to Linda, and thank you to all of the folks who have given so far on this match day. It's a one-day drive. We're trying to just do it one day this winter to help pay our bills here at 89.7 NPR News and to give our listeners a chance to show their support, to show their appreciation for 89.7 NPR News and All Sides of the Ann Fisher and everything they hear every day. And by showing your support today, your dollars go farther. They get matched by our generous donors. Take advantage by calling 1-866-897-9678. That phone number again, more slowly this time, 1-866-897-9678, or online at wosu.org.
Well, where I hang out in the newsroom, and Mike Thompson as
Mandy
well.
Mandy has an exciting life.
I do. Very exciting in the newsroom. The phones are always ringing off the hook, and I seem to be the one to answer them. But anyway, we use laptops, desktops, headphones, batteries, thumb drives, weather apps, social media, paper, even ink, pixels, bytes, bits, and audio editing software. And all of it is a means to inform, a means to complete that symbiosis between 89.7 and its audience, you. By calling 1-866-897-9678 or going online to WOSU.org and making a pledge, you're making a tangible contribution to the community's voice that's available anytime, day or night on 89.7 NPR News. So please give today, the one-day match day, 1-866-897-9678.
And we have a thank you gift on this match day, and this is a perfect gift for me because I'll have to make an admission. I have not watched Downton Abbey.
And that's a shame.
Everyone talks about the show, how great it is. I'm sure it's wonderful. It's great writing, great drama. The reason why I haven't watched is because I don't want to jump in on season three. I haven't watched season one and two yet. So this gift, this thank you gift, is for me and everyone else out there who wants to catch up to Downton Abbey. For $20 a month as a sustainer, we will send you a Downton Abbey DVD combo of seasons 1, 2, and 3. You can get caught up in one day if you wanted to go on a Downton Abbey splurge. So for $240, $20 a month as a sustaining giver to 89.7 NPR News, you get seasons 1, 2, and 3, and you can get all caught up before season 4 next year. Or you can relive seasons 1, 2, and 3 if you've been a watcher and a viewer of Downton Abbey. Call now, 1-866-897-9678. 1-866-897-9678. $20 a month gets you all three seasons of Downton Abbey, and those $20 a month will be matched by our generous donors. 1-866-897-9678 or online at WOSU.org.
You know, we make it really convenient for you to give. It only takes a couple of minutes of your time, and all we need is your name, your contact information, how much you want to give, and how you want to pay. This day and age with debit cards, credit cards, it saves us time, you time, and it saves us money. Make your investment right now on Match Day and have your dollars matched. And you can do that by calling 1-866-897-9678. We have volunteers waiting for your call, or you can go online, WOSU.org.
We know you listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher every day at this time. You might be listening at home on your radio. You might be listening at your office on your computer. You trust Ann Fisher and her guests to bring you thoughtful analysis and interesting topics every day from 10 until noon, and then also again in the evening from 7 until 9 if you happen to miss it during the day. It's the kind of thoughtful news discussion that we know you appreciate, that you know we know that you want to support by calling 1-866-897-9678. Have your dollars matched by our generous donors. Call 1-866-897-9678 or go online at WOSU.org.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Foundation, thanking WOSU and others who make Columbus a smart and open community. At the Columbus Foundation, personal service and community pride combine to help donors help others through impactful philanthropy, big or small. It's here that history resounds and opportunity abounds.
Music.
Welcome back to All Sides. Let's turn our sights to school funding. Governor Kasich's advisors say that this new school funding formula is making up for changes in student populations and property values that have occurred over the last 4 years. Rural property has grown in value while suburban property has decreased in value, for example. Representative Debbie Phillips, she's an Athens, Ohio Democrat, said that when the governor said last week that poor districts would get more, they expected an increase from the current year, but that's not exactly what happened. And there's some kind of ticked off superintendents and so forth out there.
Right. The formula, you know, makes significant changes. The way that it works is it tries to bring bring all districts up to the 95th or 96th percentile property value, because, of course, our funding formula has been declared unconstitutional and being too reliant on property taxes. So what it says is let's even out all districts to $250,000 property value per capita. And then it adds on for various things, say the number of poor students, the number of gifted students, the number of English as a second language students, the number who are college, involved in college credit at the high school level, things like that. So it's complex. The argument is that they are adjusting. Really, this is the first big adjustment in 5 years. And if you think about the state of Ohio in the last 5 years, we've gone through the recession, have come out of it. And if let's take in the Columbus area, say a district like Dublin, really wealthy district 5 years ago, big growth area. Well, you know, then the foreclosure crisis hits, you know, a lot of that property value falls. They still have a big population. Okay. So maybe under this formula, I don't have Dublin's numbers right in front of me, but say a district like that might be getting more, even though they would appear to be right percentage wise than they had before. And then there might be a district like say a suburban district in Cleveland that has seen their property values significantly decrease, or their student population. Mm-hmm. And this is tagged to student population. So when the spreadsheets came out, you know, the districts were just livid. Here is Kasich saying on the day of the unveiling, this is going to be an increase for the poor. And he said it point blank. If you're poor, you're getting more money. If you're rich, face it, you're getting less.
I think that's what the rub has been for a lot of school officials.
Yeah, I think that he may have oversimplified it, and then people did get upset about it. But it does seem like every time a budget gets rolled out and then the school spreadsheets come out like maybe 3 or 4 days later, there are always people yelling for one reason or another.
Right. I mean, that's just the way it is. One thing they say, we haven't had a funding formula in Ohio for 4 years now running.
Right.
How have they been funding schools then? If there's no formula, what has been the method?
They've been falling back on the 2009 formula
there's
for the
no
most
new
part.
Formula.
And then
okay.
there has been some, there's been an adjustment. I forgot the name of it, but it basically is, you know, trying to account for the fact that the funding formula isn't there.
And, you know, just to be clear here, you'll get some people going, well, this doesn't meet the Supreme Court rulings of 10 or 15 years ago when the court four times ruled that the funding formula was unconstitutional. Well, that may be true, but talking political reality, this Ohio Supreme Court, or maybe a slightly earlier version of it, ruled by Republicans, made it pretty darn clear that they were not going to force legislators to do anything. So they didn't overturn the earlier four rulings saying that the whole thing was unconstitutional, although I think you could make a case if that original case came back to this court, they would say, look, this whatever you got is fine. We're not going to rule it unconstitutional. But I'm just saying, look at political reality. I don't think that the DeRolf rulings, they just don't have much relevance today. That doesn't mean you can't yell and scream about the current formula or Kasich's proposal and say it's unfair to the poor, but political reality, it's
doesn't
not
matter.
Enforced.
It, right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the sticking point here is that they want the money to follow the child, if you will, and so that, you know, some deep in the spreadsheets, it's trying to reflect the rich and poor nature of individual kids within that district.
One of the governor's top education advisors, Barbara Mattei-Smith, said that when the focus is on who is poor and who is wealthy, we forget the children. She said that if, quote, if we start thinking we should drive more money to this district because they are poor, I'm saying I'll make a value judgment on which of my children deserve support and which do not, based not on them, but on where they live. Now, the question is, would you rather send your kid to a low wealth, low and usually low performing public school district, or would you rather send your kid to typically a high wealth, high functioning or high performing school district? They tend to go hand in hand. Am I wrong?
I think that what you're pointing out there is that what she said, and I don't know if she said it in a hearing or to a reporter, but you know, what she said there did not match what the governor said the day that he unveiled this. And so I think there is somewhat of a disconnect on this issue of rich and poor and how you determine that. I mean, I will say that overall, they ran some numbers. They pulled out the 14 biggest urban districts in the state, and those districts are getting more money, the most money, in terms of quintiles, which are 20% brackets. They're getting the most money of all, and they're also getting the highest per pupil funding overall as an average. As you go down the quintiles to the poorest, the first 20% poorest, they get the next biggest amount, and so forth on down to when the high wealth districts are getting the lowest amount and the lowest per pupil on average. But whenever you do a spreadsheet over 600 plus districts, that's not going to work across the way.
There's another part of the Kasich budget that I think maybe hasn't gotten as much attention as it should, and that's it's something separate from the funding formula, and that is the vouchers. Kasich wants to right now you get a voucher for a private school. But only if your kid is going to a poorly performing, a flunking public school for the last two out of the last 3 years, something like that. But under his proposal, you'd say, no, that's not the criteria. The criteria is whether you are low income or the definition. Was it twice the poverty? I forget what it is. But it's not just low
income. Thing. It's not your school anymore.
It's
you personally. It's your income level.
And somebody
again says something about that.
Yeah, and some folks have run some analysis on that and said, boy, well, if we really did that, we'd get more than 40% of the kids would qualify for vouchers. Now, I don't know whether you have the money to pay for that, but at some point, once you phase that in, I think he wants to start with kindergarten.
And they're capping it at a certain number of students and so forth.
But boy, that's where you're really getting into an ideological debate, public versus private schools, how much taxpayer money should be started to be funneled into the private sector. And boy, that to me is a real bitter fight there.
And I think that's been a battle that's been waged since the 70s, really. I mean, there have been pushes for voucher funding. And I think in Ohio, we started out with vouchers just in a pilot level, right?
I think in Cleveland. And for a couple thousand students.
And then Bill's right. The criteria has been slowly broadened. And this budget pushes it further.
John in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, John.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. My question was, what findings or, I guess, numbers are out there as far as what the gaming revenue has done so far in relation to this school funding issue? And if I remember from the amendment, it was supposed to be spread evenly, and I think the counties that were housing the actual casinos are supposed to see an additional benefit. I guess, what are the numbers that have been reported so far?
I would imagine, thank you, John, for that call, that would not be information that would come at the state level, right? That would be something you have to ask each.
I think that the casino revenue has not been coming in at projections so far, but you are right in the sense that that money is coming to the communities it has its own formula of how it's coming into the communities
and that's above
that
and
house
beyond,
them. And that formula is separate from this.
But we don't know that, the answer to that
question specifically.
I don't have it.
I'm sorry, on the top of my head.
Okay. Sorry about that, John. Thanks for the call, though. We have just a few more minutes left if you do want to give us a call. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Are we done with education for now? Real quick, Attorney General Mike DeWine wants to power to regulate internet cafes and effectively shut them down with a $10 win cap. This is one of the, I don't know, it's one of the first 10 bills that's been introduced, I think, in the House. Usually that's a signal that it's going to get a little bit more attention than otherwise. But there's a huge constituency that opposes this because it brings in a lot of local revenue.
Yeah, to be clear, the House actually passed this thing last December, but then there was only a few days left in the session and the Senate didn't deal with it. So there is a lot of there's a big push to shut these places down. DeWine estimates, 800 of them, 820 of them, companies have registered and said we were doing this. And he thinks that even if he thinks maybe on average, maybe each one of those has 10 storefronts. So he thinks there might be like 8,000 of these places all around. But you're right. There's pushback from those
storefronts.
Once
again, local governments too.
Some of the local governments are getting some money from them. Yeah. And they've even had some of the local governments have actually arranged special deals, special ways to tax and regulate them. Then you got the customers themselves who came here last December saying, "Oh, don't shut us down. We love this kind of stuff." Of course, the big debate is this illegal gambling or not?
Mm-hmm.
Is this gambling occurring?
Are those connections happening? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, is it gambling? I mean, these store owners say, "Well, it's not really gambling. We're selling phone cards." But the attorney general says, "Yeah, you're selling phone cards, but then you use the phone card to get onto a machine that looks an awful lot like a slot machine. So it's illegal gambling, and you never got the voters to okay you. The casinos got the voters to okay a constitutional amendment authorizing them. You 8,000 stores, you didn't get any kind of constitutional amendment. You didn't even get a state law authorizing you. How are you guys doing this? And you're not getting taxed at all, basically, they're saying."
Right. But, I mean, also the voters didn't approve the video lottery terminal slots at the racetracks.
That's true. But at least state legislators fudged it and passed some kind of
isn't
authorization.
Isn't this just great
you're right.
Pure capitalism, though? They sprung up. They had something. Yep. They had a product people wanted to purchase. On its face, it's not illegal.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. This idea of capitalism and entrepreneurs, this is what the 1851 group, it's a kind of a libertarian free market think tank, that's what they came out with yesterday saying, look, reward these people. If it's more business and it's more jobs, who are you to say, just because you it's distasteful to you, who are you to try to shut them down? So they're vowing to file a court suit and try to protect these people, let them stay in business.
Thank you so much to all three of you, Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News, Julie Carr-Smythe of the Associated Press, and Bill Cohen of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Appreciate it today.
Thanks for having
me. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks to our panel of Statehouse reporters. Joining us now, News Director Mike Thompson and reporter Mandy Trimble with the latest on Match Day on 89.7 NPR News.